Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, right now I'm going to ask you to hold your calls. We do welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or out across America at 464-8295. But first of all, let me introduce our special guest this evening, David Carrico. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dr. Stan. Great to be with you.
Okay, fine. Well, now we're going to be spending the first hour talking about your book on the Great Seal of the United States. And then, of course, we'll spend the second hour talking about the secret societies on campus, on college fraternities, a new book that you put out. But right now, let's just get into the background of the Great Seal, because I've read that. And in fact, we've carried that here at our ministry for a long, long time. I don't think that most Americans have any idea that there is a secret emblem, an emblem of the secret societies or the mystery religions on the back of the American $1 bill. We just take it for granted, as it is with all of the mystery religions down through the ages. They've hidden their emblems in plain sight, where people see them every day, but nobody ever recognizes them. And so it is with the Great Seal on the back of the dollar bill. How did that get on the back of the dollar bill? Where did it really come from? Because we don't have any pyramids in America. We don't have anything that would make us believe that this is an American symbol. So where did this strange symbol, a pyramid capped by a glorified eye, where did that come from, and why is it on our seal?
I think that your introduction to your program is so appropriate, where you talk about illusion and how that illusion is king. And in the book, the Great Seal of the United States, and its occult meaning, we talk about what we call the Great Lie. And there's a lie that is being propagated by certain Freemasons and occultists that the original intent of our country was that it was to be a springboard for the New World Order. And this is certainly an illusion, and it is a lie, that our country was originally founded to become what would eventually evolve into the One World Order that the secret societies have dreamed of for hundreds and even thousands of years. And this seal of the United States, which certainly, as you say, it has nothing to do with the God of the Bible, with Christianity, or the founding of our country. These are Egyptian and occult symbols that had nothing to do with the early farmers and settlers of America. Yet it shows that at the time that our nation was founded, there were forces at work that wanted to head our country down that direction. But I think it's real important to emphasize that those forces did not win out, but yet they planted the seeds of that conspiracy, and at this point in time, sad to say, that conspiracy has made great inroads. And through the principle of the few manipulating the many, which has always been the design and the purpose of secret societies, they have been able to make great inroads toward heading our nation toward the One World Order. And the reason why secret societies are secret is because if the common mass of citizens in America would know and realize what these people are doing, they would not be able to do it. That's why they are a secret society. Because if their true intents and agendas were known, there would be such an outrage that they could not do that. But the great seal of the United States began with a committee that was appointed on July 4th, 1776. And that year, 1776, we'll be talking about a lot this evening because there were a lot of things happened in 1776. Three things principally we'll discuss tonight. Of course, the founding of our nation, and also the founding of the committee that was the designers of the Great Seal of the United States, and also in 1776 was the origin of a group in Germany that started on a college campus called the Illuminati, and also in 1776, later this evening we'll talk about, that was the year that the Phi Beta Kappa, the college fraternity began. So that year is coming up a lot tonight.
Uh-huh.
But in July 4, 1776, the first committee was appointed to design a great seal for the United States. And on that committee, there were three men that are quite famous Americans, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And that was the beginning of the research into the Great Seal. And eventually, the Great Seal as we have it today was the work basically of three men, Jefferson, Barton, and Charles Thompson. And the Great Seal as we have it today is basically the work of these three men. And what we do in the book, The Great Seal of the United States and its Occult Meaning, is look at these individuals and try to see if there was indeed a conspiracy that was at work to try to head our nation down that road toward the one world order.
Well, you know, I think what really confuses people when we talk about this sort of thing is the fact that nobody ever points out that since the inception of America, and I'm going back to shortly after the Pilgrims arrived at Plymouth, there have been two parallel forces in America. One, the Christian, and this was the predominant force here, initially when the settlers came, and then after the Great Awakening. But there was always this other force, this occult force. And, of course, in 1630 or 1640, when the other people arrived from England, and they were Rosicrucians, and they were sent here by a man named Francis Bacon, who had written a book called The New Atlantis. And Francis Bacon was the leading occultist of that time. And they were sent here, of course, to try to seize control of this government, so that America then would lead the world into the New World Order and restore lost Atlantis. That was the whole theme of, of the book. And so these people were here. They'd been here in 1630, 1640. And, of course, it wasn't long after America was founded that they set up Harvard University and Yale University, and they were Christian universities. And it wasn't long after that before the evil men, the occultists, had taken those over and began turning them away from God. And so then, of course, why the Christians set up Princeton University to train professors, to train ministers, and, well, through the years, they've taken over Princeton as well. And so whenever the Christians organize anything, why, these occultists working like termites in the dark certainly gain control and then destroy, because their goal, of course, is the destruction of Christianity, the New World Order, the New World Religion. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that is absolutely a fair statement. And even within the Committee of the Great Seal and our Founding Fathers, John Adams, who became president, of course, was a Mason, and he became an anti-Mason and began to severely oppose Freemasonry. And Jefferson, who, it's not really known if Jefferson was a member of the Freemasons and the Illuminati. Many people thought that he was, but certainly in Jefferson's writings, there were many things that were sympathetic to the French Revolution. And a lot of things of Jefferson that certainly were deist and would lean toward that Illuminist a mindset. And a lot of things. And Jefferson is a very controversial figure, and of course he is revered as a great American, and there's just some things there that really make me wonder. And in our chapter on Jefferson, we go into some of his support of the French Revolution. And in Washington, Washington was someone that very well knew that the forces of Illuminism were at work in the colonies. And though Washington was a Freemason, he wasn't an active Mason.
And of course, he actually opposed Illuminism when it became very obvious in the late 1790s that the Jacobins and the Illuminists had come here. Have you ever seen that letter he wrote about the influence of Masonry and Illuminism here in the United States?
Right, absolutely. And we quote Washington in our chapter on Washington, where he definitely did warn against Illuminism, and he said he very well knew that it was at work, and he definitely opposed it. He said nobody knows any better than him that those forces were at work. And in Franklin, we see Franklin, who was a Rosicrucian, and he was a member of the Hellfire Club, and he is certainly somebody that had those ideas within his mindset that, and in Manly P. Hall, we have a chapter here on the Order of the Quest, and Manly P. Hall spoke of Franklin as a spokesman for the Order of the Quest. And this, when we look, Manly P. Hall wrote a book, and of course Manly P. Hall, for those that don't know, was hailed as Freemasonry's greatest philosopher in his obituary in the Scottish Rite Journal. And he wrote a book called The Secret Destiny of America. And just the title of that book offends me. And this gets back to what I talked about, this concept of the great lie. The secret destiny of America, that implies that America really isn't about what most Americans would think America's about, but there's a secret agenda. And of course, according to Hall and others that share his mindset, and this gets back to this dual currents you talk about in our country, that there are those that say that the real destiny of America is to be this springboard for the New World Order.
Well, of course, as we look at what's going on in the world today, and we see America using its military force and its great financial wealth to force other nations into this idea of a world government. We're the major financier of the United Nations. The United Nations is centered here. It is our money that is financing all these conferences, and even though we may pretend that we oppose this or we oppose that or the other thing, many times that is simply used as a vehicle to get the other people to vote for it. But although we have a Christian heritage, don't you think that today we really are the major driving force behind this move towards the new world order, as it were, and that uniting all the world in preparation for the coming world ruler?
Absolutely. And it's not the influence that the few have over the many is much, much greater than we even want to think. And In our book, we talk about a secret society called the Skull and Bones, which, of course, our president now belongs to, as did his father and as did his grandfather. And this happened at Yale University. And Yale University has been a place of contention. It began as a godly university, and it was a place very early where those that had this Illuminist mindset, they determined to take it over, and they did. They wound up taking over the university. But back with our president's grandfather, Prescott Bush, for 40 years, and he was a member of the Skull and Bones class, and for those of you that don't know about the Skull and Bones, the Skull and Bones is a secret society that has Masonic and German ties, that is a very exclusive group out of Yale University. They initiate about 15 members a year, and there's probably 500 to 600 active bonesmen at any given point in time, and the very elite and powerful of the world are in this group. But what I was thinking with what's going on in the world today, in the Bones class of 1917, there was our president's grandfather, Prescott Bush, and also a man by the name of Edward Harriman, the railroad magnate that even in the 50s, he was estimated to be worth over $100 million back in the 50s. But what's interesting is that after the Russian Revolution, that Edward Harriman was given oil drilling rights by Lenin himself for Standard Oil in Russia.
Now, is that Edward or is that Averill?
That was W.A. Harriman.
Okay, that was Averill's father.
Yeah, that was the father.
All right.
Yeah, W.A. Harriman. He was the railroad magnate that was with our president's grandfather in the original Bones class of 17.
Okay.
And they were also, for over 40 years, both on the board of Brown Brothers Harriman, who were, if you follow the money trail through Thyssen and the German Bund Bank, they were instrumental in financing Adolf Hitler and the Nazi war machine.
The best anyone money could buy.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And when we see today the politics playing out, and now we see our president, who's a skull and bones man, working with the prime minister of Great Britain, who also is a skull and bones man, putting the pressure on the Arabs. And now, of course, when the Arabs are going to squeeze the oil, we go to Russia. Well, that's not when you see that Standard Oil, way back, right after the revolution, Standard Oil and W.A. Harriman, they had the drilling rights in Russia long, long ago. So those connections were set a long, long time ago. So you can see, it's just like Roosevelt said, things that happen in politics, they don't happen by accident. They happen because they are planned.
That's sort of like the fact that Condoleezza Rice, who's the chief foreign policy advisor, sat on the board of Chevron Oil for many years. In fact, there was an oil tanker that used to ply in and out of Angola on the west coast of Africa. It was called the Condoleezza Rice. But shortly after George Bush was inaugurated, it went out as the Condoleezza Rice, and it came back with another name because they certainly wouldn't want the American people to think that there was any relationship between big oil and the administration. Of course, Dick Cheney, after he left government, after being there for some 20 years, he was the Secretary of Defense under the first Bush administration, suddenly becomes CEO of Halliburton Oil Company. Now, that is an amazing thing for a man who has never held a private job to become the chief executive officer of one of the largest oil development companies in the world. And he was there for 8 years, comes back as our vice president. And we begin to see this whole scenario unfolding. The man who we've appointed to be the president of Afghanistan, he was an advisor to Unocal, which is the company that is going to be building the pipeline across Afghanistan. In fact, there were a number of books written in 1999. One is called Taliban by Ahmed Rashid. The other is Unholy Wars by James Cooley. These are both written in 1999, and their message is America's major goal is to put a pipeline across Afghanistan so that they can tap into the oil riches of the Caspian Basin.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's the most amazing thing. Now that the Afghan, we've destroyed the Taliban, who, incidentally, we supported up until 1991, until September of 1991. We were the largest source of their financial aid. Now that we've destroyed them, why plans are being made to build that pipeline? But, of course, anybody who suggests that is some sort of a wacko. But the reality is that it's really true. And this is how the world really works. And the men who fight and bleed and suffer and die in the wars, why, they never really understand what the wars were all about.
Right. The poor man fights the rich man's war. And it's just like the Bible says, money is the root of all evil. And it's just so sad that when you see that, when we think and realize that even before 1920, Standard Oil had drilling rights, thanks to Mr. Harriman, in Russia, and in the 40s, and we have a letter in our book that documents that Standard Oil was sending oil tankers from the United States to Germany, and this is in 1941. This was after Pearl Harbor when they were sending these oil tankers, and not only that, but they were armed with Nazi guards. And this is just unbelievable, and people just don't want to think that these people, they're not Americans, they're internationalists, they have nothing to do with America. Their own agenda of financial power and manipulation goes beyond any love of country or love of God. These men have no love of God or country except themselves, and their goal is just to manipulate people like pawns on a game to further this goal. Because this idea that they look upon the common masses, that they're just ignorant, they don't have the censor mentality to govern themselves, and if we leave these people to themselves, they're just going to make a mess of everything. So these so-called illuminated elites, they feel that they have, that the end justifies the means for whatever they want to do. So that's why we have the mess that we have. And when people begin to see and understand that this illusion does take place, and we see these forces that often look like they oppose one another, when in reality, they're both working toward a common goal. And manipulation, and it's just like Rothschild said. He said, if you give me the control of a nation's money, it doesn't matter who's running the country, in so many words, that if we control the money, that we control the people. And this is true. This is true, and this is what these people have done. And when you just look and you just think a little bit, it's not that hard to see these forces that are at work.
Well, of course, you know, all we have to do is look at the conflict in the Near East. Who is it who supplies money to Israel? Why, we do. Mm-hmm. Who is it who supplies money to the Palestinian Liberation Organization? Why, we do. We finance both sides.
Yeah.
During the Iran-Iraqi war, why we were supplying money and weapons for Iran, and we were for Iraq, and we were supplying weapons for Iran. Kept the war going much more efficiently, and an awful lot of people died. But we finance both sides in so many conflicts, and people don't understand that, not because we don't have a great and wonderful country and a wonderful heritage, but because the people from these secret societies have gained control of the reins of power, and this is what people don't understand. That's why it doesn't really matter sometimes whether we have the Republicans or the Democrats in the White House. We find now that the greatest move towards federal control of education has come under the Bush administration, and the greatest increased spending for federal education has come under the administration of a so-called Christian conservative. There's something wrong with the picture.
Yeah, and people can't understand why it would be to someone's advantage to finance two opposite views. And this goes back to the motto of the 32nd degree of the Scottish Rite, order ab chaos, order out of chaos. It's a deliberate plan. It's the old Hegelian dialectic that if we can just finance both extreme views from that, we can bring about the position that we actually want to have. And they do this through media propaganda, and they'll pull things to the position that they want things to be. And it's a deliberate plan, order out of chaos. And it's been the Illuminist plan ever since Weishaupt. And he didn't even originate it. He just drew on concepts from people that were before him, and it's the goal of secret societies.
Well, why don't you explain to our listeners who Weishaupt was? Because that, many people, you know, have never heard of Weishaupt. My grandfather told my father about the Illuminati, but the average individual in America has never heard of it. And they used to have even a fairly good-sized section on the Illuminati in the old Encyclopedia Britannica, but they've largely removed that, just as they remove the truth from most textbooks, and you won't study these things in college. You won't understand the fact that the Illuminati existed not only in Bavaria, it existed right here in the United States, and we can document that from material we were able to get out of the Library of Congress, but with very great difficulty, because somebody at the Library of Congress didn't want us to get it. But anyway, why don't you tell our listeners who Weishaupt was, because you started out saying so many things happened in 1776. And one of them, of course, was the creation of an organization on May 1st of that year, just a couple of months before the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, and there's many people, among whom I am one, that believes that the 1776 on our dollar bill has more reference than just to the founding our country, but that it actually points to the date also of the starting of the Illuminati on May 1st, 1776, which of course people know that May 1st is also the high holy day of communism.
And of course, I think what people have to understand is so often everything will have two meanings.
Mm-hmm.
One meaning to the people, which would be the average individual, 1776, our Declaration of Independence, but of course to the occultist, it would have a very entirely different meaning. And so everything is hidden in plain sight with dual meanings, just as we talked about the two major forces in America, one the occult, one the Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So the caption on the base of the pyramid in Roman numerals 1776 would have a dual meaning, one for those of us who believe in America, the other for those who are disciples of the secret societies.
Right, and that's why these groups love Freemasonry so much. In Masonry, they have the doctrine, they call it the esoteric and the exoteric. There is, when you read your ritual and your monitor, there is what is the obvious meaning. Like for instance, the point within the circle in the monitor, they'll tell you that this means the exoteric, or the plain obvious meaning is that this is your brotherhood to man and your duty to your fellow man. But the esoteric meaning of the point was in the circle is the worship of the phallus. So there's a plain and obvious meaning, the exoteric, plus there's a spiritual meaning, the esoteric.
And incidentally, for our listeners, every time you turn on CPS and you look in the lower right corner, you'll see the point within the circle. You'll see their symbol on the CPS.
Yeah,
but these symbols are everywhere. And those of you who've never read Kathy Burns' excellent book, Freemasonic and Occult Symbols, and she goes into all, there are literally 1,000 symbols you see almost every day, and you never recognize them.
Yeah, and for those that are lucky enough to have read and to have a copy of John Robison's book, which was one of the, it's a book George Washington read and commented on, that was one of the original exposés of the Illuminati, that the point within the circle was how Weishaupt and the original Illuminati, that's how they would identify themselves. That was the original sign of the Illuminati, the point within the circle. But originally, in Bavaria, on May 1st, 1776, and also there are just so many layers to this, also May 1st is one of the high holidays of witchcraft also, which is another thing that isn't a coincidence. But Adam Weishaupt was a college professor in Bavaria, and he was an occultist, and at the time he formed the Illuminati, he was not a Freemason, but he formed the Illuminati through gathering together intellectuals in the college at that time that were of the same mind of himself, that believed this lie that goes back to the philosophy of Plato and the mystery religions, that the greatest thing for mankind would be for these illuminated individuals to rule the ignorant masses, because they had this great insight to keep the dumb working class from destroying themselves through their stupidity. But anyway, Weishaupt.
We're going to have to interrupt you here. We're going to have to take a break. And when we get back, of course, I think we'll hold off calls for a little while, because we're getting right down to the very essence of what this is, the ideas of Plato laid out in the Republic, of a philosopher king, a ruling oligarchy, a massive police and military to keep the people down, and then everybody else enslaved. That's what Plato wanted. That was the ideal utopian society that he believed in, and so many of the elite have believed in ever since then. They believe that they should rule, and we should be ruled. We'll be back here in just 3 minutes with David Carrico. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you will decide right now that you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us do what we do. This most amazing thing helped us happen this last week, a couple of days ago. A gentleman called me from the South, and there's a station in Atlanta, Georgia, a major Christian station, 50,000-watt station, and he actually has purchased time there for us so we can be on once a week there with our Saturday programs and begin to reach out all across the state of Georgia. And it's really a tremendous sacrifice on his part, but he believes enough in what we're doing. He's willing to put the funds up. We're not in a position to at this time. We're overextended as it is, but God does answer prayer. It's really a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to reach out now into an entirely new and hopefully exciting audience. And this is the time when God's people have to understand that our religion has been under attack. They've changed the message. They've changed the music of the Christian church, both Catholic and Protestant. And believe me, they are out to destroy both branches of Christendom. And if there weren't some good in both of them, they wouldn't be working so hard to destroy them. But they really are, because they realize the one thing that stands in the way of the accomplishment of their ultimate goal, and that is creating the rule of the prince of this world, the prince of darkness here on this earth, is Christianity, and they will do everything they can to destroy it. And what we're trying to get people to understand is this is not a political battle between communism and capitalism, or it's not a cultural battle, it's not an ideological battle, it's a spiritual battle. And that is our recurrent theme, and we'll take you into the mystery religions and understanding of the secret societies, and of course how they play out on the political battlefield of today. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we hope that many of you will either want to subscribe to our newsletter or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and where you get our best tapes of the month and our newsletter. Whatever you can do, why, we will very much appreciate. And then, of course, if you're interested in knowing about the book we're talking about, it's called The Great Seal of the United States. The Great Seal of the United States by David Carrico. Why, you can call the exchange and they'll tell you the suggested donation for that. And, of course, getting this information, getting it out, understanding the flaunting this occult symbol that comes right from the pit of hell on the back of our Della Ville beneath the caption, "In God We Trust," shows how blatant they are. But you see, they figure that most people are too dumb to understand. And, of course, they depend upon the apathy and the indifference of the prosperous Christians in this country. So heavenly-minded, the no-earthly good, people who worship the ground their heads buried in, that they're going to be able to continue working their diabolical schemes. And they truly are. These are the people who are behind the horrible massacres and the horrible wars of this last century. And every one of those wars was used for one and only one purpose, and that was to bring about this move towards the New World Order. Well, the Vietnam War was only partly that. The rest of it was to distract us as they took God and prayer out of our schools during those years and began to centralize power in Washington, D.C., and undermine the fabric of our Constitution and limited government. Why? Because why, you had in the Supreme Court between 1941 and 1971, majorities of our Supreme Court justices were members of the Masonic fraternity in between 5-4 and 8-1. At one time, for many years, several years, 8 of our 9 Supreme Court justices came from the Masonic fraternity, where these men had sworn a oath, whether they knew it or not. They had sworn an oath to seek for the light. And, of course, the true meaning of that light, it has a dual meaning. But, of course, to those who understand the truth of the occult, why, they were swearing an oath to seek for Lucifer. And so it is little wonder that America is where it is today, not because their God is greater than the God of the Bible, but because of the apathy of the American people and because our ministers are not being the leaders that they should be in this great and horrible battle which is being waged today for the souls and hearts of all mankind. Well, let's get back to David Carrico and more on the subject of the Great Seal of the United States. Oh, Dr. Stan back here. My guest is David Carrico. His book, The Great Seal of the United States. And David, well, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? Now, you're a minister, aren't you?
Yes.
And, of course, you've been studying this for... How did you ever get interested in studying Masonry? Most ministers are afraid to do it. Most ministers are afraid to speak out about it because, I'll tell you what, if you did this in the South... Why, you'd be forced out of your church because the Masons have infiltrated our churches all across America. In fact, when the Southern Baptist Convention tried to address this issue, why, of course, the man who prepared their special report was working with the Masons. And I came up and said, there's nothing wrong with Masonry. And he was actually letting them, for all intents and purposes, write his report. Now, I think that they did reconsider that at a later time. And, of course, I think they've gone into many of our seminaries and routed the Masons out of the Protestant seminaries. But one reason we have so much trouble with the Protestant religion today is they took over our seminaries 50 years ago and, of course, then taught false religion and false gospel, everything, of course, to neutralize the church in this great and final spiritual battle for the hearts of men. So, how did you get involved in the study?
Well, back in the 70s, and here I'm telling my age a little bit, but back in the 70s, we were researching and studying the New Age movement, and we saw first the spiritual aspect of the New Age movement and how it was pointing toward a one world order and one world religion, and then we began to see the political aspect, how that there was more or less a political and religious wing of the New Age, and that they did indeed work together. And then in the 80s, I ran into a man that you know, Colonel Tom McKinney. And we were doing a radio talk show here in Evansville, and we were dealing with subjects like New Age and the occult, New World Order, and this type of thing. And when Tom McKinney in the 80s, we interviewed him on his book, The Deadly Deception, and Tom dropped some things in our lap that were like bombshells to us. And Masonry opened up another paradigm to the study that just began to fill in so many of the blanks. And we just began to look at the whole picture from a deeper concept and begin to see just really how interwoven and layered this conspiracy was and how that Masonry was indeed a coordinating factor between the religious and the political aspects of this conspiracy.
Well, Colonel McKinney is one of my favorite people. And
I love Tom so much. He's
right. Great American.
He's a great Christian, a great American, and he's one of my favorite people.
Right. Okay, so you gradually begin to see this, and the tragedy is that everybody's afraid to talk about it. I've been to, in my church that I used to go to, you know, they'd put on these conferences on the New Age and they'd tell us how terrible the Mormons were and how terrible the Jehovah's Witnesses were, but both of them came out of Masonry. And when I said, well, why don't you talk about the parent organization? They said, oh, we couldn't do that. It's too controversial.
Right. And there's been many conferences where I've been told that I can be a speaker if I'll just shut up about Freemasonry. And we've refused to do that because we've refused to be silent. And the church system did not have to force me out. I came out. I rebuked them and I came out because the Word of God tells us that we are not to have fellowship with idolaters, and Freemasons are idolaters. We are not. According to the Word of God, if we give the right hand of fellowship to a homosexual or to an abortionist or to a Freemason, we ourselves are in sin.
But, of course, don't you think that many Masons really don't understand what it's all about? Most Masons really don't understand it?
Yeah, a lot of them don't. And, of course, you've got Masons that profess Christianity, and you have those that don't. And, of course, that's two different paradigms. But for any Freemason that professes Christianity, any Mason, and of course there are many that just join casually to get their card punched, to be one of the good old boys and help themselves in business, but anyone that's been through ritual and has watched initiation, they cannot deny that there is definitely a plan of salvation that is taught. And that it is based upon these mystery religions. So that has been a lot of what we have tried to do, and we just had another email just tonight from a man that was a Methodist pastor that has stand up And he's taken a stand, and he's renounced Freemasonry, and sad to say, he has had to do what we have done. He's had to leave his organization. But this is the thing that we've tried to do. We've tried to warn Freemasons that they're involved in something that's not of God. And certainly, whether, and even for a Mason that's not a Christian, he has no business in Freemasonry from a moral aspect. And certainly, any Freemason that would profess Christianity, he's involved in an organization that preaches another gospel and that has an agenda that is in line with the ancient mysteries and not with the God of the Bible. So this is what we have tried to do, and we have seen many, many Freemasons that really are Christians that when they have this pointed out to them, they do indeed come out of Freemasonry. And many, many, many people have done that.
And you know,
we just thank God for it and give him all the glory.
Well, I think it's really very interesting. If any Freemason out there has a copy of Morals and Dogma, why, all you have to do is look in the index for the Great White Throne of Judgment. And you will find that every Mason will stand before the Great White Throne of Judgment, on the Judgment Day. And that really sounds pretty good until, of course, you read the Bible and find out that in the Revelation that the Great White Throne of Judgment is reserved only for the damned. No Christian, no one is going to heaven would ever stand before the Great White Throne of Judgment. So they understand that, and they are actually recruiting as many souls as they can for Hades. And this Mason, the good people, I mean, a lot of good people get into this, and they have no idea what they're into. But I appreciate that you're so dedicated to trying to point these people in, you know, towards our Lord and towards salvation and away from where they are going if they don't renounce Masonry.
Yeah. And what a lot of Masons, they don't understand, and here again, it's the deception. It's the illusion. It's the illusion. They want to give the illusion that when a Christian man goes into lodge and he prays to the great architect of the universe, that he's praying to the God of the Bible. But when what happens in lodge, we can have a Muslim, we can have a Hindu, and we can have a Christian side by side. They pray a corporate prayer to this umbrella God, the Gayatu, the great architect of the universe. And Gayatu is not the God of the Bible, but he is the God that accepts all men of all religions. And he doesn't accept them on the basis of their own religion, but he accepts them on the basis of their fidelity to Freemasonry and their dedication to follow the Grand Master Hiram Abiff, who the Kentucky Monitor calls the savior of Freemasons. And this is the reason why Freemasonry is idolatry. It lifts up prayer and lodge to a God that's not the God of the Bible. Prayer and invocations to this pagan deity results in tremendous spiritual bondage. And many, and I've had Masons contend this point with me that they don't mean it as idolatry. Well, there's no such thing as symbolic idolatry. God says, do not have any other gods before me. Do not worship other gods. Now, it doesn't matter what idolatry means to us. What matters is what idolatry means to God. God is a jealous God, and he forbids the worship and the invocation of pagan deities. This is idolatry, and this carries a severe spiritual price tag. And this is what we try to point out to Freemasons. And the bondage that Freemasons and their families get into for participating in this occult organization is just tremendous. And that's what we desire to do, is to bring the liberty of the gospel of Jesus Christ into these people that have been victimized by the organization of Freemasonry.
Well, God bless you for what you do. And let me just comment for our listeners out across America. If you know enough about Freemasonry to talk to Masons about it, why, please do it, because you owe it to them. If you don't, we have, I think my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, is as good a source of information, and Masons will sit down and listen to it until they begin to understand where we're going. And if they will watch through it, they understand what this is about and what they're into. And I've actually been told that Masons have, after seeing that video, have gone back and renounced their membership. Now, it takes a lot of courage to do that because, of course, you lose your friends, you may very well lose your job, you lose the economic advantages, you lose the fellowship and the assurance that the Masons will watch after your family if something should happen to you. But, of course, we're talking about eternity, and that's a lot longer than our time here on Earth. And we're all going to live forever. The only question is, where are we going to live forever? So we got a little bit away from Adam Weishaupt and the Illuminati. Let's get back to Weishaupt. He's formed the secret society based on really the mystery religions. And of course, he tells everybody that if you get to the higher level of the secret society, and there are various levels and requires study and dedication, then you're going to get more secrets and more power. And he gets an awful lot of key people. I mean, really important people. It's said that even somebody like Frederick the Great was involved with this Illuminist movement. But many of the free thinkers and the leaders of Germany, and eventually this movement began to even to spread into Europe. So, and it was always for the intellectual who's always looking for those secrets that will make him understand the mystery of life.
Right. And I'll give our listeners the six basic planks of the foundations of Illuminism. The first is the abolition of monarchy and all ordered government, the abolition of private property, the abolition of inheritance, the abolition of patriotism, the abolition of the family, and the abolition of all religion. And if you just jot those six things down and watch the evening news, you can see these forces at work and where they're going. And you can see many diverse groups all coming together on these principles to fulfill this Illuminist agenda. And I'll try to give our listeners a brief historical timeline on how this came down from the time of Weishaupt and what Weishaupt did. Weishaupt's ideas were not original with himself. They go back, as we've mentioned, to the ideas of Plato and the ideas of the mystery religions. We could take it all the way back to Babylon. But what Weishaupt did, he saw in Freemasonry a vehicle to spread his agenda. And originally, the Illuminist was not a Masonic organization. But what Weishaupt did in a satanic diabolical genius, he used the Illuminati as a lodge within a lodge within Freemasonry. And what he would do is he joined Freemasonry himself, and then he promoted his Illuminist agenda until he took control of his lodge. And he would do this throughout Europe, and when he would take control of the lodge, they would become what they called their Illuminist lodges. And from the founding of the Illuminati in 1776, in 1782, there was a very important Masonic Congress in Wilhelmsbad, Germany. And what happened in Wilhelmsbad in 1782, there were at that time 3 million Illuminist members in Freemasonry in Europe. So from 1776 to 1782, 3 million Illuminist Freemasons were there in Europe. So we're talking about a movement that really exploded. And at that time, there was a lot of opposition to the Illuminati within Freemasonry. But by 1782, at the Congress of Wilhelmsbad, the Illuminists were so powerful that they forced the Freemasons to recognize them, and they kind of had like the homosexuals in the military, don't ask, don't tell. And they more or less were hands off, and they stopped fighting the Illuminists, and they knew that if they would throw them out, that they would destroy their entire organization, it would just split down the middle. So they let the Illuminists alone, and they allowed them to work their workings, and the Illuminists more or less continued to support Freemasonry. So there was a marriage in 1782 at the Congress of Wilhelmsbad between Illuminism and Freemasonry. And then we can go on down to 1870, and I believe 1870 is another very important date. in the history of the Illuminati, and that was more or less a wedding between European and American Freemasonry. And in 1870, there was a man by the name of Mazzini, who was the head of the Grand Orient of Italy, and he formed an allegiance with a man in America that we've already mentioned named Albert Pike.
Now, I think for our listeners, the Grand Orient was a lodge in Europe, which supposedly had no Christian backing. It was sort of an atheist Masonic lodge. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, the Grand Orient, we speak about the Grand Orient of France and the Grand Orient of Italy, and they were basically the ruling bodies of Freemasonry within that country. And Freemasonry in America, in its inception, had a strong Christian veneer. In a, in about 1817 in America, so this is something we need to understand, the Freemasonry that George Washington joined had more of a Christian veneer than Freemasonry of today. In America, in about 1817, the early 1800s, Freemasonry went universal, and many of the trappings of Christianity was stripped from it. This was never so in Europe. In Europe, the Grand Orients of France and the Grand Orients of Italy, they were blatantly anti-Christian. They publicly opposed Christianity, and they vowed to stamp out Christianity in Italy. This was their stated purpose, and they one time bragged that they were going to shut down every Catholic school in Italy. And of course, Mazzini was instrumental in the Italian Revolution in the late 19th century. They actually drove the Pope out of Rome, and they tried to kill him, and they assassinated one of his chief aides. So there has been no veneer in Italy of the hostility between Christianity and Freemasonry. It's come to bloodshed in France and in Italy and also in Poland. So the veneer of Christianity has never been in place over there. So in 1870, there was formed between Mazzini and Albert Pike what was called the Palladium Rite of Freemasonry. And there are several organizations we mention in our book, and here again we get back to the concept of illusion. We talk about the Illuminati, we talk about the Order of the Quest, we talk about, which was Manly P. Hall's term, we talk about the Palladium Rite of Freemasonry.
Now, I think that, for our listeners, that is above the 32nd and 33rd degree. These are secret rites which most Masons don't even know exist.
Right. This is a rite that is totally Luciferian. It makes no bones about being Luciferian. It's by invitation only, and it's a rite that unites European and American Freemasonry. And here again, we have this lodge within the lodge concept.
And that's really what, if you don't believe that Masonry is a lodge within the lodge, you need to read Manly P. Hall's book, The Lectures in Ancient Philosophy, and I actually quote that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. I'm going to have to digress because we've got Bill calling in from Washington, and we'll be having to say goodbye to our people up in Washington shortly, so let's get Bill on before the hour is out. Bill, did you have a question or comment?
Sure, I had a comment. I wanted to comment a little bit about the New Age movement. Now, I've heard a lot of people, they call the New Age actually the Rainbow Swastika, what they call it, and wasn't it Hitler's plan was to create a supreme Aryan race? Well, you know, we have it today, the same thing being rebuilt in a new jacket, and that's the multiculturalism, the race unity. It's not in a physical form, but it's individuals who are like-minded, and yeah, that's what they call it. We're having it at our college, Race Unity Day. We're having all the different religions come together with their flags from other countries. And, it's really touchy to talk about this with people because they might accuse you of being racist. But, you know it's not right. You know, how can races be unified? We're different, you know.
Well, the only thing that joins races together is that we all have a common God.
Common
in other words,
belief.
We have basically God created all men in his own image. Now, this is the only way that you can get black and white and Hispanic to be brothers. We're only brothers because we have a common God. You took away the common God, why there is no brotherhood of man.
Right.
But of course, there really still is this Aryan belief, and behind all of this so-called effort to create a multicultural society, their real goal is so that they can play one group against the other and create the chaos, and then they will bring the order out of the chaos. Who's behind this whole movement? Why? Who's financing the illegal Mexican and Hispanic aliens coming to this country? The Ford Foundation. Just as they've always funded the communist movement so we could have a battle and conflict. They finance the homosexual movement. They finance the illegal immigrant movement. Anybody who wants to verify that, the book Importing Revolution covers how they finance the illegal immigrants movement. And if you'd like a article out of the Wall Street Journal on how the Ford Foundation has been funding homosexual movement on our college campuses, just give us a call or drop us a line. We'll send you a copy of that. And this is what they're doing. So they're really getting people confused, but eventually they're going to be manipulating one group against the other. Anything else, Bill? We're just about out of time.
Oh, that's about it. It's a little strange to me because right on our wall, you know, next to the where we have the Bible studies posted, they've got this multicultural stuff right next to it, you know, and people need to realize and figure out, yeah, I guess, you know, things aren't fun anymore. I mean, there's real serious problems.
Yeah, when every country turns its back on God, why, you get more and more problems. Hey, look, thanks so much for calling, Bill.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have to, of course, say goodbye to our listeners up in the Great Northwest here, and, of course, want to remind them we'll be back again tomorrow evening. That'll be Friday evening, and with another, we've got some great programs lined up this week and next week, but we ask you to pray for America, and we ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our ministers because they should be leading this spiritual battle. And many of them don't understand what it's all about. Some of them do or are afraid to speak out. And you need to be there helping them and guiding them and praying for them. So pray for your ministers. Pray for our leaders. And please also remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so we're going to be back again with you then tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got just a moment before we have to take our station break, and then David Carrick will be with us the next hour, and we just haven't even begun to get into the whole background of the of this book dealing with the Great Seal of the United States, and maybe we'll talk to David when we get back, and maybe we can spend this evening doing that, and then we do have another book on college fraternities. And, of course, most people think college fraternities, just a lot of fun, and, you know, a lot of this is the time when the young people let their hair down. And of course, this is true. Most people do not understand that many of these, or at least some of these, do have a certain occult significance. And, of course, it's so important that Christians understand that behind so much of what's going on today are dark and sinister spiritual forces. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we will accept your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the central coast of California at 464-8295. We've been talking about the David Carrico's book, The Great Seal of the United States. It's a cult meeting, and you have to understand it's the cult symbol, and it is put on the back of our dollar bill to flaunt the power and the influence of these wicked people who have seized control of the reins of what was once a great Christian nation. And only when you understand that can you understand what's really going on in the world today and why America seems to be on a one-way path to destruction. David, can we spend the rest of this hour doing the Great Seal, and then we'll have a time for me to read the book on the fraternities, and we'll do that sometime soon?
Just whatever you'd like to talk about, Dr. Stan, is fine with me.
Well, I think we've just sort of begun to scratch the surface here on,
right,
on the Great Seal.
Right, it's just so exhaustive
and,
that...
Let's get back to Adam Weishaupt. So basically we've got Mazzini, and he's over in Italy, and he is heading the revolutionary movement there, and he's also one of the chief honchos in the Grand Orient, this anti-Christian Masonic lodge in Europe. And there's a difference then between English Freemasonry and the Continental Freemasonry. And you were saying then that, of course, it was the Continental Freemasonry, the Grand Orient, which comes to America in the 1870s. Is that correct?
Right, and Freemasonry began in England. England is the grandmother lodge of all lodges. In 1717 in England was the founding of what we call speculative Masonry. Before that time, we had what was called operative Masonry, and these were men that actually were workers in building. They would actually build. They built the great cathedrals in Europe. And how Masonry began, it was not unlike a labor union. And if you were a bricklayer, let's say, in the Middle Ages in Europe, when you would learn your trade, when you would develop a certain level of skill, your foreman would either give you a password or a handshake. And this would be your pass, so to speak, within that industry. If you would go to another town and the foreman would hire you for a job, you could give him a password or a handshake, and this would let him know that you had a certain degree of skill and you were entitled to a certain level of pay. It would tell him more or less how far you had gone in the industry. And, of course, these men that worked in these various trades, they would have what would be kind of a precursor of a union hall. And, of course, these men were working men, and they would party, and they would drink, and they would do things that that working men often do that would not be godly. And these men were from various nations and various religious backgrounds. And from this, we just had kind of a conglomerate come together that would kind of a hodgepodge of all religions and philosophies that was certainly not a Christian one. And in 1717, men that were basically Rosicrucians, they got the bright idea that they could begin to expand this to people that were not actually working men. And they used this as a vehicle, not just as a club to more or less function as a labor union, but as a vehicle to propagate their political agenda. So from the time of 1717 in England, the Grandmother Lodge, the Grand Lodge of England, which is the origin of all speculative Masonry, this began. And from the very first, Rosicrucians put within the ritual of Freemasonry the exoteric and the esoteric teachings. that there was definitely, from the very first, there was a plan of salvation that was not Christian, and there was a agenda that was in line with the ancient mystery religions. And the men that developed this, they were Rosicrucians, and they had this, and of course at this time, the thought of Francis Bacon and men such as this were the elite intellectual position of the Europeans. And this was the thinking that was embedded and codified. And of course, as always, these thinkings and these ideas, of course in America, these ideas are not shocking, but become mainstream. But at the point in time in history, they developed this and propagated it secretively because the outcry of the common populace would have been very great against these ideas. And now, and this is the mistake Carol Quigley made. Of course, Carol Quigley, who wrote Tragedy and Hope, one of the professors of our at Georgetown University of our former president, Bill Clinton, Mr. Quigley, in the 60s, when he wrote Tragedy and Hope, he was very aware of this conspiracy, and he came to the point where he thought he could make it public. And, of course, the powers to be, they did not think that that was such a good idea. But this vehicle through Freemasonry, and we talked about in 1870, this Palladium Rite, where we more or less at that time, we had an intermingling and a cooperation between the European and the American Freemasonry. And at that time, when Pike and Mazzini formed the Palladium Freemasonry, right after that, in the late 1880s, there was a group came together with Pike and Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who also, Blavatsky, actually fought in the Italian Revolution. She was actually a soldier with Mazzini in the Italian Revolution. And then we see Blavatsky coming to America, and with Albert Pike and two other, Henry Alcott judge and another man by the name of Steele, they were the original founders of the Theosophical Society. And your caller, Bill, who called in late in the last hour, he was mentioning this Arian philosophy. And the Arian philosophy is also nothing new. It goes back into the mystery writings. But in the book, The Secret Doctrine, by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, this Arian philosophy of the Arian race was actually set down and codified. And this was picked up by Albert Pike, who was also, while he was the supreme commander of the Scottish Rite, and the most powerful Freemason in the world, he was also the head of the Ku Klux Klan in Arkansas. And Adolf Hitler had a copy of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine on his bedside. And, of course, this is where this doctrine come from. And here again, we see this coming down through this common source. And then we see people like the Skull and Bones people and Brown Brothers Harriman, we see them financing Adolf Hitler. We see them sending oil to Nazi Germany. We see them getting drilling rights in what everyone thought was a closed country. Standard Oil was drilling in the before 1920.
And you're talking about now in Russia.
Yeah, in Russia.
Of course, it's not no just accidental that Henry Ford is helping both Adolf Hitler and the communists building the great Ford plant at Turkey, which is still working in Russia today, producing the trucks for the communists.
Absolutely.
But people don't understand. They have financed both communism and fascism and Nazism.
Right, and this dialectic at work. And here just recently, we had a prime example of it. You mentioned the immigration issue. And we see our president, our Skull and Bones president, talking about, strengthening our borders because of terrorism, and then we see him wanting to grant amnesty to millions of illegal aliens.
Yeah, that is a little funny, difficult to explain, isn't it?
Yeah, and we see this over and over and over again, this diatribe and this dialectic.
It's really a dialectic, and what that dialectic is, you actually create conflict. You have a one side, they call that the synthesis, and you have the other side, they call that the antithesis, And then, of course, you have the new conclusion, which is the thesis. So you have a synthesis, an antithesis, and a thesis, which is the end result of the conflict between the two. It's called the dialectics. It was originally suggested by a man named Hegel, a German philosopher. And it is a very effective means of leading to confusion and ultimately to your goal.
And what you have seen, and what I have seen, and what so many people have seen, is how they're doing this, and it's almost like a new paradigm. When you begin to understand, and for me, I've had a lot of paradigm shifts, and for me, studying Freemasonry in conjunction with these secret societies, it's wow, yeah, we can see what they're doing, and you can understand the reason behind these things that seem so contradictory, that there is a common goal and a common purpose that's being propagated here, and it all goes back to this formula that was laid down by Weishaupt. These people have goals, and they're going after them, and it's a very diabolical scheme that is, and when we say diabolical, it is straight out of the pit of hell, and it is propagating this lie in our country that we are to be the springboard for this new world order, and that is nothing but a lie. It's an absolute lie. Just today we had an email from somebody that was disagreeing with us, and that's fine, but he believes this idea that the people that founded our nation were all a bunch of evil Freemasons, that, you know, because Washington was a Mason, that he was evil. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Our nation was founded, and like I say, there were people, and the Great Seal is proof that at the time our country was founded, these men did try to do that, but they did not succeed. They did not succeed. Our nation was founded on godly principles with a fine constitution and Bill of Rights. But this is a quote I'll read from our book on page 45 from Manly P. Hall. And this is what he says, and he says it pretty well. He says, a peculiar and particular purpose known only to the initiated few, the Great Seal, says Hall, was the signature of this exalted body, and the unfinished pyramid on its reverse side is a trestle board setting forth symbolically the task to the accomplishment of which the U.S. government was dedicated from the day of its inception. Now, in this statement, we can see the lie where Hall is saying that when you look at the dollar bill and you see this pyramid and you see the eye and you see all of these symbols that we go into great detail explaining all the occult meaning, that all of these things are proof that our nation has a secret destiny, as he would say, that we are destined to be the springboard of this new world order. The truth is, our nation was founded on godly principles by predominantly godly men, and it was only this element that has tried to bring this in to subvert our country off of its original intention. This is the illusion, this is the great lie that these occultists are wanting to propagate and wanting to use to destroy our country. And we see in the development, and of course it was not, it was interesting. I'll read another quote that's very revealing. In the late 19th century, there was a congressional committee that reviewed the Great Seal. And there was a man from Harvard University called Charles Elliot Norton. And Mr. Norton, in 1883, in this committee that reviewed the Great Seal, this is what he said about it. He said, "It is greatly to be regretted that the device adopted by Congress in 1782 is elaborate and allegorical in character. As to the reverse, it can hardly look otherwise than as a dull emblem of a Masonic fraternity." So in 1883, the Great Seal was so controversial that it could not even be displayed in public or used in any way. There was such an outcry against it.
Isn't it amazing, David, that today most people don't even know that, because they have gained control of our media, our textbooks, our universities, certainly. So these things are never discussed. And it's like when the plane crashes in the desert and there's nobody to hear the sound. Why was there any sound at all?
Yes.
And, of course, if you don't tell the American people these things, if you don't ever discuss anything significant, if you spend all your time debating inconsequential things, or when you do have a debate, you get a completely imbecilic conservative or Christian on one side and a couple of learned professors on the other who are experts in debate, why the debate is rather one-sided. And this is the technique that is used. Or either that, or you demonize and marginalize and insult the man who's trying to tell the truth to the point where nobody in their right mind would support his views. And yet you're absolutely right. There is no question at all that the symbology on both the front and the back of the Great Seal of the United States had its foundation in the occult. In fact, on the front of the Great Seal of the United States was the bird containing the feathers in one hand and the olive branches in the other that we see on the back of the dollar bill. But the interesting thing is, of course, initially it was not an eagle.
Right.
It was a phoenix bird.
Yes.
Symbolizing the mythological bird that was rising from the ashes. And, of course, what that was really all about is Atlantis would rise again from the ashes. But people didn't understand that. And eventually, of course, maybe that was just so obvious, maybe somebody would have understood it. So you see, we'll see, and if you get pictures of the evolution of that bird, it moved from being a phoenix to a sort of a looked like a turkey, and then eventually it became an eagle. But step by step by step, they simply changed that. And actually, we have that in my own encyclopedia, where the Americana, where it explains what happened. But everything is in 13s. It had nothing to do with 13 states. There were 13 arrows. There were 13 olive branches. There were 13 words. And in it, what is it, Anut Kaptus, there were 13 steps in the pyramid. There are so many 13s there. And of course, 13 is an occult number. And I'm sure you've gone into that as well, haven't you?
Right. And on page 44 of her book, we have the picture of the original depiction of the bird and how it appears now. And they're obviously different. The one between the 1782 and the 1902 versions, and it's obviously a phoenix. You can see the tuft of hair at the back of the head. And of course, and again, quoting from Mr. Hall, which we quote in our book, he says, as the phoenix was the symbol of regeneration, the tuft of the feathers on the back of its head might well symbolize the activity of the pineal gland or the third eye. So this goes back to Egyptian symbolism, this idea of the new Atlantis, of the resurrection from our country, that out of this will be born this new world order. And of course, this is also symbolized. We have the picture in here of from Manly P. Hall, of the capstone, which is of the pyramid, which of course isn't finished there on the dollar bill. And on page 49 of our book, we have the picture from Manly P. Hall of the master mason standing upon the capstone. And this is what he says. He says the master mason becomes the capstone of the universal temple. And of course, Mr. Hall saw Freemasonry as the vehicle that would bring this about. And you can ask yourself the question, what do all of the political and religious leaders of the entire world have in common? Well, they have in common that they all meet together and bow before the altar of Freemasonry. They have now the common meeting place of the United Nations and the common meeting place of Freemasonry. And certainly Freemasonry is the vehicle that is uniting the religious and the political aspects of this New Age movement. And it's going to bring it about as this new one world order.
And this is what people really don't understand. The other side does understand it. They all know this, but of course they think that we're too stupid to understand, or, you know, a few voices out there aren't going to do any damage. But you see, if there were enough voices, it would become a great choir. And if you have to get the information, you need to get copies of this program and get some of the books we talk about. And then, of course, help us to get the word to others who can get it to others. And when enough Americans understand this, they're not going to be able to carry out their plans because we are the vast majority. But you see, if the majority doesn't understand, they will continue to be manipulated. They'll respond to every article they see in the newspaper. We will have the crisis of the day or the crisis of the week or the war of the month. Doesn't really matter. They can manipulate the masses because they know how to do it because they control the media. And what we need to do is free the people from that control and get them to the point where they can think on their own. And really what's the most gratifying to me, David, as I do my programs 5 hours every day, and I do programs to certain specific audiences. We have a wonderful program at 7 o'clock every morning in the American Freedom Network, and it's to the people in the area of Colorado. And those people, now, they don't even need me. They can think on their own. And it's so gratifying when we are discussing something, and one of those people calls in, and they understand it. I mean, I'm more or less superfluous. They've been able to think through the problem and come up with an understanding of what the issues are on their own and think beyond the obvious to the truth of what's really happening. Well, my telephone number is 464-8295. That's 464-8295, or if you're out across America listening to us on the Internet, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is David Carrico. His book is The Great Seal of the United States, Its Occult Meaning. And it's a fascinating book that will give you tremendous insight into what we're doing. And, of course, if you'd like to get a copy, if you'd like to find the suggested price for a donation, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And of course, the Great Seal of the United States is something seen every day on the back of your dollar bill, and it is a symbol that comes right out of the pit of hell. And the fact that there is no outcry, the fact that most of our buildings, federal buildings in this country, have a Masonic cornerstone, the fact that our nation's capital is laid out in Masonic occult symbols. So many of our buildings are actually Masonic in design. The average individual has no idea because nobody ever tells them. And once you point these things out, you begin to see these things every single day. And if you haven't read Kathy Byrne's excellent book, Why Freemasonic Symbol and Freemasonic and Occult Symbols, that's Freemasonic and Occult Symbols, must reading for anybody who wants to be able to understand what they see on a daily basis. Have you read that book?
Oh, yes, I have. I have all of Kathy's books, and they're all tremendous, and it is just a tremendous book. I highly recommend it, all of her books.
All right. In fact, we're so lucky. You know, there's just a small group of people you certainly get to know who all of them are and who you can trust and who you can't. And certainly I trust David and I trust Kathy very, very much. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, and I think you said it very well, that our job is to make people think. And what you have seen in your books and videos, which are excellent, and what we've seen in our materials, that they impact and they change people's lives. They lead them back to the God of the Bible and to Jesus Christ. And when you deal with Freemasons, you'll get one of two reactions. Some Freemasons will just get angry, and they will not talk to you. But not all Freemasons are like that. And when you can get people, Freemasons or not, that will read this material, and they will begin to examine it and check it out and to begin to think, it's all too true. And it begins to make so much sense of what's going on that is just an absolute paradigm shift. So that is what I would urge people to do, to get this book, to read it and check it out. It's factual, the materials that you're putting out on your program. This thing is truth, and truth will find a home, and truth will change people's lives. And every time someone comes to the truth, they become an important warrior in this great struggle that's going on. And it is so rewarding to see people's lives impacted.
Well, of course, we had gotten away. Now, we had Mazzini, who was leading the revolutionary movement in Italy, and he and Albert Pike then put together the Palladian Rites. And these were, frankly, satanic rites. And, of course, if you read Aleister Crowley's writings, he will tell you that he had been a 33rd degree Mason for 12 years before he was invited into going into the upper levels of Masonry. In other words, these are levels that the average Mason has never heard of. And you can ask him about it, and he says, well, he's going to tell, he doesn't know whether it's not true, they don't exist. He'll say that if he doesn't know about them, he'll say that if he does know about them. Why? Because he can't admit that this really is a Luciferian movement and that there are degrees above that. I would say that the vast majority of Masons don't even know about the Palladian and the other rites. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And also, Aleister Crowley was involved in a European rite called the Rite of Misery in Memphis, which was based on the Egyptian mysteries. He held the 97th degree in the Rite of Misery in Memphis, and he was the Grand Inspector General of that rite for all of Europe. And here again, most American Masons would not. They know basically about the York and the Scottish Rite, but they don't know about many of these other groups. Madame Blavatsky and Annie Besant, the original heads of Theosophy, they were involved, as was Charles Leadbeater, in what was called Coal Masonry. And this had its charter off of the Grand Lodge of Adroit Humane in Paris, France. And this is a lodge, a rite of masonry that has both men and women in it. And a lot of people don't know about that. There's just so much that is deceptive about Freemasonry that people don't know about, that they need to find out about. And certainly that many Freemasons, when they learn the truth about the lodge, they drop it like a hot potato, as they rightly should.
And, of course, one of the most famous disciples of Madame Blavatsky was a man named Thomas Edison.
Yes.
Who was Henry Ford's closest friend. And, of course, Thomas Edison would meditate, go into these trances, as you do when you accept the disciple of Theosophy, and he'd come up with some of the most amazing ideas. In fact, much of what we enjoy today in the way of our electronic devices are direct products of the work or the vision or the call of the secret messages that he got when he was in his trances. So certainly many of the major people of modern times have been involved in the occult. I did a program the other day with a Dr. Frank Bell, whose grandfather was, at least he claims, was Alexander Graham Bell. Alexander Graham Bell used to sleep in a pyramid, so he would have kept the, of course, occult enlightenment. And, of course, Tesla, who, a great electronic genius, was tapping into these dark forces as well. Once you understand this, then you begin to understand so much of what's going on in the world in which we live today. And it's an entirely different world than most people understand. You and I, of course, we get our inspiration from the scriptures and from our Lord. But these others get their inspiration from the dark side, and they simply sell their souls in return for the power that is available to anybody who wants to tap into it. But let me warn you, you do not want to do that, because, of course, that will determine where you will spend eternity.
Another very interesting personage we talk about in our book is, and of course, the Great Seal went on the dollar bill in 1934, and we have in our book pictures of the front and back of the 1934 and the 1935 dollar bills. And the man that was president of the United States at that time was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, we talk about one of his ancestors, Clinton Roosevelt, in our book. And Clinton Roosevelt and Horace Greeley were Freemasons that were members of an Illuminous Lodge in New York State. And what a lot of people don't know is that Horace Greeley and Clinton Roosevelt helped to finance the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. And at the time when Horace Greeley owned the New York Times, Karl Marx was a European correspondent for the New York Times. And it's just another one of those amazing coincidences. Here we have this ancestor, Freemason. Clinton Roosevelt was a Freemason. Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the same family was a Freemason. Clinton Roosevelt finances the Communist Manifesto. Then Franklin Delano Roosevelt gives away Eastern Europe to the communist dictator Stalin.
My goodness, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Well, we're going to have to take another 3-minute break, Dave. And if you'd like to get yourself a cup of coffee or a drink of water, because I know it's getting late back there, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty really is listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who believe in what we're trying to accomplish to help us. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, certainly you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is, of course, pay the bills for the 15 or so stations we're on every Saturday, and the stations we're on the rest of the week, and certainly we have about, I counted them today, I think the 31 or 32 stations, and then by the time you get into the shortwave, we do 2 hours of shortwave, we have 3 hours of satellite, we have 5 hours of internet. Why, we're getting up to about 40 different outlets across America, and how exciting it is to really be able to talk to people across America. But, you know, for the average person, you don't have the opportunity to do what I do, and you just don't have the electronic equipment. Maybe you'd do it better than I would, but under any circumstances, why, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing, and as time goes by, and if the Lord tarries, why, to expand our message, and as long as God gives me my health and breath and a microphone, I'll be here with you 5 hours every day, bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. If you want to help us, join the Radio Liberty family and give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask Mary for a suggested donation, or subscribe to our newsletter, or certainly if you'd like to get a free copy of the newsletter, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. If you haven't had one before, let me suggest the April newsletter, because it will explain to you where the Islamic terrorist movement came from. Just request the copy of the April newsletter. I hate to say it, but I think it's the best one I ever did. In fact, I got a call today from a fellow who's just going on to radio, going to be doing 4 hours of talk radio every day on the East Coast. And he just reading my newsletter and called me and asked me if I'll come on with him. So I guess the first of the week I'll be doing 6 hours, maybe even 7 hours of radio a day. In fact, I did another program today on 120 stations, only a half hour, but people have an opportunity to hear the information, and when you're helping us, you're helping what we do, and that is reaching out across America on the airwaves, the last means we have of reaching people today with the truth. And then, of course, please tell other people about our radio programs. Feel free to copy our radio programs and, you know, make copies and pass them out. I mean, if you get the tapes from us, you're welcome to copy them. The same thing is true with our newsletter. Go to our website, radioliberty.com, and you can pull our newsletter down there. Encourage other people to go to our website and read the material that's up there and help us to get the truth out across America. It's exciting to be able to do what we do, but we can't reach enough people on our own. But you can help us, and every person you reach can reach other people who can reach other people. And simply by this this exponential growth, why, we can begin to gradually have an increasing impact, and I know we're having an increasing impact, not only what we do, but our good friend John Leffler and Chuck Missler, and I can give you a dozen other people that I know that are doing the same thing. Chuck Chris Meyer back in the East Coast on his radio stations back there. Many of the, even some of these programs that are 30 or 40 or 50 stations are really getting out a very, very good message. And of course, if we can actually touch the hearts of some of the people with a much larger radio audiences than we have, and when I see them now, why, they're putting out our message in many respects about the spirits of battle in which we're engaged. And this is not an ego thing at all. If they've got a larger audience and they'll put the message out, I want to do everything I can to support them, because this has to do with saving America or saving souls or whatever way that Lord wants to use our ministry. I don't know. Will we have any impact? Only what impact he wants us to have But he calls us to do our best. He calls us to be the watchman on the wall, and that's what we'll be as long as he leaves us here. So we'll be back with you in just a moment with David Carrico and, of course, his book, The Great Seal of the United States, and then the occult, or its occult meeting. And if you'd like to find out about that, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under siege today. Okay, Dr. Stanback here, and our guest is David Carrico, and we've been talking about, of course, all of these various things. We were talking about Aleister Crowley, and for those of you who don't know, Aleister Crowley was a Satanist. He was a homosexual. He was one of the most evil men. In fact, he liked to say he was the most evil man in the world. He called himself the Beast 666, and of course, Kinsey was one of his disciples. If you read Judith Reisman's book, Kinsey, Crime and Consequences, you'll see a picture of that Kinsey had taken a posed picture at the shrine of Aleister Crowley in Italy. Crowley was eventually forced out of Italy because it was suspected, although they could never prove it, he was involved in child sacrifice. But that's what Satanists do. They sacrifice human children because, of course, God loves little children. He's told us to be fruitful and multiply. And, of course, this is a means of doing everything we can to defile God and his orders, his instructions to us. So certainly we found these people in key positions throughout the world. Crowley had a dictum. It was called, do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. In other words, you make the decision. You do what you want to. And that's just what we're teaching kids in school today. At one time, we taught them the Ten Commandments. We told them that they should be good. They shouldn't have sex before marriage. They had to obey. They had to be honest and trustworthy. And now, in our DARE programs and other programs, we told them that we want them to learn to make adult decisions. What 14 or 15 or 16 or 17-year-old child can make an adult decision? And what even 18 and 19-year-old child really can decide what's right and wrong on his own? That's why we need God. That's why we need God's rules there to follow, because we make decisions on our own. Why, we're going to create moral anarchy and moral chaos and the great, great tragedies that befall so many of our young people. That's why 50% of the co-eds who are tested on our major campuses now have a human papillomavirus infection, and unlike love, why human papillomavirus remains forever. And, of course, many of these women will pass this on to their sexual partners. They will get cancer of the cervix and, of course, have to have a hysterectomy at a young age. This is what happens. There is a price to pay for sexual promiscuity. So, well, why don't you pick up the story from there, David? And as you go through, of course, we were talking about Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his connection to Clinton Roosevelt, and this very evil and wicked families had a tremendous impact on the history of America, hasn't it? Including Teddy Roosevelt, who most people think is this great, great president, but he was really one of these aristocrats who believed in a ruling elite.
He certainly did. And would you mind if we'd plug our ministry and give our website?
You go right ahead. You do that two or three times. I'm sorry I didn't get that out before. If I get so involved talking, you just go ahead and say, hey, I want to get my number
out. Well, I do too, and I'm the same way. We're just here talking, and we've got more to talk about than we have time to talk about. It's a fast 2 hours, and my wife's over here. Give the website. So our website is ritualabusefree.org, www.ritualabusefree.org. That's all small letters. And I'll give our phone number, and don't call this now. This is the line that we are on. Our telephone number is 1-812-477-6338, and I will be up. It'll be fine to call. That website, again, is www.ritualabusefree.org, all small letters, and the telephone number is 812-477-6338. We have a lot of materials about these things that we'll be glad to talk to you about. And there are just so many avenues that we have to explore here, and we can talk just a little bit about Aleister Crowley. And he is so important because he followed the same game plan as Adam Weishaupt of a lodge within a lodge. And Aleister Crowley who was very involved in European and American Freemasonry. He was also a member of two other groups that worked the same way as the Illuminati. And certainly they were Illuminist, spiritually and structurally connected groups. They were the Golden Dawn and the OTO. And when Crowley, in his autobiography, Crowley tells how Theodore Roos and Karl Kellner, German Freemasons and OTO members, they recruited him from Freemasonry into the OTO, which is the Ordo Templar Orientis, which is dedicated to propagating what I call Masonic Satanism, Crowleyism, the do what thou will, the basic philosophy of sexual magic. And through these groups, Crowley, the Golden Dawn, and the OTO, they still exist and operate today, and they're still propagating this Crowleyan agenda. And it was then, as you mentioned, in 1944 in Italy, Aleister Crowley had what he called his Abbey of Thelema, where he would do his ritualistic workings. And in one of his rituals, Crowley's son died while performing a ritual with his father, and this almost even drove Crowley insane. He died a drug-addicted lunatic. But in 1944, there was a young girl from Thelema, Italy, that was attending a ritual in Crowley's house, and on the way home, she died from the abuse that she suffered, the drugs and the sexual abuse she suffered in this ritual, and she died, and they found her in a ditch trying to walk back into town. And at that time, Mussolini was the ruler of Italy, and Mussolini, who of course we know was no moral giant, he deported Aleister Crowley and forced him to leave Italy. And at that time, Aleister Crowley came to Pasadena, California, and in 1944, Aleister Crowley founded the first OTO chapter in Pasadena, California. And from that point in time, you can trace the history of occult crime in the United States. And in that group, there was some very interesting people. One of the members of that original 1944 OTO chapter in Pasadena was a man, a science fiction writer by the name of L. Ron Hubbard, that went on to found a religion that we today know as Scientology. And another strain here that we can pick up briefly is back in 1934, we can pick up the history of the actual placing of the Great Seal on the dollar bill. And as we already mentioned, in 1883, that the Great Seal of the United States was so blatantly Masonic and occultic to even display it publicly caused a public outcry. But in 1934, there was a man, and this was in the Roosevelt administration, that it would behoove us to talk about just a little bit. The man was named Henry Wallace. And from 1933 to 1944, from 1933 to 1940, he was Secretary of Agriculture in the Roosevelt cabinet. And Wallace was a very interesting man. He had ties to a man that he called Mr. Guru. That was Nicholas Roerich. And this was a man that was a member of the Theosophical Society. He had ties to some people that were the leaders of the New Age movement, Alice Bailey and Foster Bailey. And Alice Bailey at the time was hailed as the queen of the New Age movement and the occult. And Foster Bailey was a prominent Freemason that was lecturing in lodge halls throughout America. The McCoy Masonic Publishing House still sells Foster Bailey's Spirit of Freemasonry. But it was Henry Wallace that was the instigator of the Great Seal going on the United States dollar bill. And he was a man very much involved in occultism and also very much involved in communism. And the three men that actually sealed the decision for the Great Seal going on the dollar bill was Henry Wallace, who was a Freemason and a Secretary of the Agriculture at the time, Henry Morgenthau, who was a Freemason and he was Secretary of the Treasury, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who of course he was a Freemason, and also we've already talked a little bit about his Illuminous connections through his family line. But what's very interesting to me is that in 1946, Henry Wallace went on to become vice president in 1940, and then he served later as Secretary of Commerce in the Truman administration. And in 1946, Henry Wallace became so blatantly pro-communist that President Truman forced him to resign. Now, what's interesting, and here we've talked tonight several times about how forces that look opposed to each other, if you look deeply enough, they're really not. And, of course, Harry Truman was a tremendous outspoken Freemason, one of the most honored, zealous Masons of all time. And in 1946, Truman forced Wallace to resign. Well, it's interesting who Truman replaced Wallace with as Secretary of Commerce. W.A. Harriman replaced Henry Wallace as Secretary of Commerce in 1946. And here again, we get back to this skull and bones connection, and the more we look at these supposedly forces that are against each other, they just keep pulling toward the same goal and toward the same ultimate objective. It's just amazing. And we talk about a lot about this skull and bones, because they are certainly an elite group that the we've talked about Tony Blair, Prime Minister of England, and so many people that are so powerful, our president and others that have so much influence over our world, that we cannot underestimate the influence that the few has over the many. Excuse me. So over and over again, we see the communist influence that we've seen May the 1st. It was not only the 1776 that not only of our country, but this is the founding of the Illuminati, the high holy day, not only of witchcraft, but of communism. And we go into a lot of detail about the communist influence in the Roosevelt administration. And here again, we can talk about people like Alger Hiff, that was so instrumental in Yalta when we gave away Eastern Europe to Stalin. And here again, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was fulfilling the family tradition by Clinton, Roosevelt, and Horace Greeley. And Alger Hiss, who was later convicted of treason, who was one of the very founders of the United Nations, these men and the communist the people that were involved in the Roosevelt administration, it's so overwhelming that it is just impossible to deny that they were pulling the strings in the Roosevelt administration. We give a list on page 68 and 69 of our books, many of the people and their connections with the Roosevelt administration and communism. Alger Hiss and Harry Dexter White, Lawrence Dugan, John Carter Vincent, Virginius Frank Cole, Noel Field, and a lot of these names, they don't mean a lot to people nowadays because time has passed, but these men are listed, and it's documented the connections they had, not only with communism, but the occult. And when you begin to put the pieces of this puzzle together, I would have to agree with Manly Palmer Hall that the Great Seal of the United States on our dollar bill is the signature statement of the Illuminati, that they are planning to subvert our nation's original intent, and they're trying to subvert the sovereignty of our nation and turn it into an Illuminous state that will fulfill the dream of these ancient secret societies. That is what we as Americans must stand against. We must cry out to educate and encourage people to think and look at this. And every time someone will take the time to examine the material and look at the information, I don't see how that any thinking person can come to any other conclusion that they can see this hand of evil not only at work throughout the history of our country, but they can see it at work at this very moment, trying to fulfill this Illuminist agenda.
Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling in from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. I just happened to be reading a book on God's warning to America.
God's final warning?
By Frank Hammond.
Oh, okay.
But he has a quote here. This is fascinating. From Amos 3, 6 and 7. Shall a trumpet be blown in the city, and the people not be afraid? Shall there be evil in the city, and the Lord hath not done it? Surely the Lord God will do nothing, but he revealeth his secret unto his servants, the prophets. And it just occurred to me that the information that you're putting out, both of you men, are some of the secrets that are being talked about here.
Amen to that. I'm going to ask our producer if he'll get David back on. We seem to have dropped him off. So, Ken, if you'll call David back there on line six, we'll get him right back. But, you know, the thing is, Herman, most people don't have any glimpse of what's going on today. And that's just why, what a privilege it is to be able to reach out across America with programs like this. And, of course, it's not only what will be heard tonight, but people will be able to access this and your remarks and our remarks for the next 60 days up there on the Internet.
Great. Great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate your calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, we're hoping that we can get our guest back on. Oh, who do we have on the line here? Who do we have?
Stan?
Yes.
This is Dave. I just got caught off. I just called back, and we're hooked up again.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much, and I don't know what happened there, but Ken, we've got Ken is our producer, and Ken, we've got David on line too. So I'm sorry. We'll anyway, we've only got a few more minutes, but I think that this is really such an important subject, and I was thinking as you were talking about communism, what people don't understand is every communist is working for a world government. Every socialist is working for a world government. Every humanist is working for a world government. The leaders of the Council on Foreign Relations want a world government. The leaders of the Interfraternity of Masonry want a world government. All of them want to destroy Christian America. All of them want to destroy the sovereignty of this country. And where is the voice on the other side saying, don't you see everything going on, whether it's fast-track legislation or free trade or our support of NATO, originally created to combat Russia, and now they're bringing Russia into NATO, and we're still staying in that crazy organization? What's it all about? It's all about the world army, which NATO is, the move towards a new world order, and, of course, with that, a new world religion and the destruction of Christianity as we've known it. And I'm sure you're well aware of all of these things, but just the continuity of these ideas from one group to another. And I'm certain that the Skull and Bones people are dedicated to this same idea as well as all of these occult movements.
Yes, and what's interesting about Skull and Bones, it goes back to the founding in 1833, I believe was the year, and it came out of Germany. So here again, we have these people, we have the connection with this German ideology that was transported through the secret societies over infiltrating our country that began, as we know, that there was a time when Harvard and Yale and Syracuse universities, they were strong Christian institutions, but they were subverted. And also in the book Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley goes into great detail how these Eastern universities were subverted. And he tells how J.P. Morgan literally bought the presidency of a lot of these institutions, and he placed presidents in these institutions that literally destroyed their foundations. So these things, it's just like Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, things that happen in politics, they don't happen by accident. And this is a plan, and this is an agenda, and these people work unceasingly toward this agenda. They hammer away at these ideas. You can see the family under attack. You can see the right of private property under attack. You can see our individual liberties under attack. And these people are going to hammer away relentlessly. That's why we must relentlessly oppose them. And take hope in the fact that we do serve a God that is omnipotent and all-powerful. And whatever it may look, these people are absolutely on the wrong side of things. So that's what we must do. We must speak out and we must oppose them just as relentlessly as they would try to push forth their agenda.
And, of course, that's what we're called to do. And I believe that more and more people are becoming aware of the fact that there is a problem. They're not quite sure how it all fits together. Some of them, of course, are taking the wrong approach. They're finding the lost spirituality and the New Age and the occult. And we have to be there pointing out that this is a one-way road to hell. And really, I mean, it's so fascinating as we see all of these things unfolding before us every day. But if you understand that the ultimate goal is a new world order and a new world religion, and then you see these things coming together and the international conferences and the religious conferences and, you know, the most unlikely people joining together religiously, and you say, what's happening? And you realize, of course, that Christendom has been infiltrated at its very, very top. And, of course, is being used to ultimately destroy the very religion which gave it birth. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, I would just say to each and every one of your listeners that I just thank God for you, and our heart is wed with yours in this fight and this struggle. And we just appreciate each and every individual that has come to the truth or is searching for the truth. And to be encouraged, because you do make a difference, and that we are on the side of the Almighty God, the God of Israel, and the God of the Bible. So take courage, be encouraged in the fight, speak out, and don't give up.
Amen. Well, thank you so very much, David, and I'll be calling you, and we'll get you on, and we'll have to talk about that book on college fraternities. Then I want to talk about your book on the Egyptian connection. That looks to me like a fascinating, fascinating subject.
We'll be more than happy to do that.
Good night, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you, Dr. Sand.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program. That was David Carrico. His book, of course, is The Great Seal of the United States, and its occult meaning, and, of course, if you'd like to know more about how to get that, you can simply call Mary at 1-800-544-8927. She'll tell you the suggested donation for that. And then, of course, we ask you right now to pray for Americans, pray for our leaders, pray for revival, because if the people in this country don't turn back to God, why, God is certainly never again going to bless this nation, and it's going to be destroyed. And then, of course, we ask you to remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back and got some great programs, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
You know, I don't know how I got cut off.
I think that's it.
Thanks so much.